Everyone knows what a cardinal is. It's the tiny red bird flying around in your backyard, feasting on seeds or bird feeders. And most might think that that's all there is to it. However, cardinals lead a completely different life behind the scenes, from their mating to how they survive in the winter. So, even though you know cardinals, do you really know cardinals? Here to talk to me this week is Dan Baldessari, an assistant professor at the State University of New York, who is an expert in bird behavior and cardinal ecology. My name is Nathan, and this is At Risk. Can you start by introducing yourself, what you do, and your pronouns?
My name is Dan Baldessari, he, him. I am an assistant professor at SUNY Oswego in upstate New York, and I teach and I do research on the evolution of bird behavior.
And how did you get into birds?
Birds are sort of the family business for me, actually, so I kind of inherited birds from my dad. He was an academic ornithologist as well, so he studied birds at a university. And so I just sort of always had an appreciation for nature and wildlife and the outdoors. I didn't necessarily know I wanted to work on birds until I got to college. I knew I was interested in biology and the life sciences. But I didn't sort of decide to fully, kind of commit to birds until I took a couple classes from professors who studied birds, and I sort of helped with some research projects on birds. And then that kind of convinced me, like, wow, okay, I guess I am really gonna sort of follow in my dad's footsteps, although I do a very different type of research than he did. But I got a lot from him, then, including my love of birds. So that's how I ended up with living the bird life.
And I know that as of late, you've been doing research on northern cardinals. What's up with that?
Yeah. So earlier in my career, before I took a faculty position, I was really fortunate to kind of travel all over the world and study some very bizarre and kind of exotic birds that are doing all sorts of weird things. Like, I studied the vampire finch down in the Galapagos Islands, which is this weird Darwin's finch that attacks birds and drinks their blood. And I studied fairy wrens in Australia, which is this really interesting case of super promiscuous mating system in birds. But now I've kind of taken a radical shift in sort of what I do research-wise, and I've decided to kind of focus on a much more common and sort of widespread and easy to find species, at least in my part of the world, and sort of taken the approach that, even though this is this very common bird that almost everybody recognizes and, has some familiarity with, that there's probably some interesting secrets, that we still don't know about them. So I kind of saw it as a challenge to, study this, bird that you would guess that we have learned everything about, and try and figure out if there's still some interesting avenues of research. And there definitely are. What my students and I mainly work on is sort of related to urban ecology. So one of the cool things about cardinals is that they're one of the species that seems to coexist with humans pretty well. You don't have to go out to the middle of nowhere to find them, right? You can find them in your backyard and in city parks, and they love coming to bird feeders and everything. So our research program is built around sort of trying to understand the causes and the consequences of that. So what is it about cardinals that make them so good at living alongside humans? And then how does that urban living affect them and maybe affect their evolution. And so some of the things we work on are like looking at their behavior, for example, to see if some of the cardinal populations that live in urban areas behave any different. Maybe they're less fearful of weird and new situations, or they're more tolerant of humans. And that's what allows them to live in these disturbed areas. And we look at things like whether city living is affecting the way they communicate with each other. So do they have to sing differently, for example, to make themselves heard over urban noise, like traffic noise? And do they look different physically? So one of the cool things about cardinals is they have this beautiful red coloration that we know is produced by pigments that they have to get from their food. And so one of the interesting things about living in a urban area is that you have access to totally different food. And so we're looking at whether the food that the cardinals are eating changes the pigments that they are able to put into their body and changes their color. And we find that it does. They look different than the birds out in the country. So those are some of the things that we're interested in. So the cardinals still have all sorts of interesting lessons to teach us, I think, about evolution and behavior.
And through this research, what behavioral changes have you begun to notice?
Yeah, that's a great question. This is really brand spanking new research for us. This previous summer, we just started some projects looking at this. And so one of the main things we're looking at is this concept of neophobia. So that's like fear of new things or new situations. And so what we did was we trained the cardinals in a rural or a relatively undisturbed area and an urban area right in the middle of Syracuse, New York. We trained them to come to bird feeders. And once they learned where the bird feeders were and they were coming to the bird feeders, we then presented them with all these weird things at the bird feeders. So different colored objects and just weird looking things that they would have no experience with or have no idea what they are. And then we measure basically how freaked out they are by those objects. And we find that the urban birds seem to be much less fearful of these weird things. You could put like a giant yellow Frisbee, you know, right on top of their bird feeder, for example. And they will come inspect the bird feeder and go back to eating much more readily than the rural birds are. So it's one idea for why these urban populations are sort of happy living alongside humans and all these weird disturbances that come along with humans. And we also find that, as you might guess, whether this is an evolved response or sort of more of what we call a plastic response that they can sort of change in real time. But we have learned that the urban birds will let you get much closer to them than the rural birds. So they have a much shorter, what we call flight initiation distance. So how close can you get to them before they will fly away? The urban birds will let you get a lot closer to them. So those are a couple of the behaviors that we've seen so far. There's other things that we are interested in looking at, but those are some of the things we've seen so far. And it's just two populations of birds that are like 30 miles apart here in central New York, but they seem to have really different behaviors. And we think that's because of this urban versus rural context. So it's kind of a fun, relatively new project that we're working on.
And now switching gears to more cardinal behavior, but like not urban behavior gear. I live in Canada and I see cardinals all year round. What adaptations do they have to help them survive through the harsh winter?
Yeah, that is another really awesome question and very relevant to cardinals. So they are, you know, year-round residents, basically wherever they are. They move very, very little throughout their lifetime. And they seem to be able to make a living in pretty nasty places, you know, so up in nasty weather-wise, and, you know, in the winter up in Canada, and they're getting into sort of the Midwestern United States. And one of the cool things is that they are really like a Southeastern species. That's the sort of core of their range. And they have steadily been expanding westward and northward And the reason they're able to go northward is, as you suggested, that they are really good at dealing with living in the winter. Now, we don't know a ton about like their physiology. So some species that have been better studied as winter residents, like things like chickadees, we know they can do these weird things like drop down their body temperature. So they go into almost like a quasi hibernation when it gets really, really cold, especially overnight during the winter. We don't really know if the cardinals can do that. One of the key things for the cardinals is they have a very, very broad diet. So they'll eat basically anything they can find, and they've gotten really, really good at exploiting bird feeders. So that is probably a really, really key reason why they're able to survive in harsh winters, is that people put out bird seed all throughout the winter, and cardinals will just go to town on bird feeders. And that's actually a very interesting potential research question. It's something I'm looking at with a couple of friends and colleagues, and we really have just barely started looking at this, but we want to see if cardinals in different parts of their range, especially during the winter, are eating different things. And our idea is that these birds up in your neck of the woods, like up in Canada and the Midwest and things, especially in the winter, they're super, super reliant on bird feeders. And that's the reason that they're able to survive through these really nasty winters. We don't know what's going on. This is totally new research, but it's something that we want to look at. So that's probably a very, very important key to them surviving the winter.
And another question, you already mentioned that cardinals turn that classic bright red from what they eat. But why do the males and the females look different? Is there a purpose to that?
They are a really classic example of what we call sexual dichromatism, right? So the two sexes have different colors. That's just a fancy way of saying that. And so the classic idea, this goes all the way back to Darwin. Darwin was the one who sort of realized that when you see cases like this where the males and females look radically different, especially if it's differences in like things that seem to be what he called ornaments, right? So kind of fancy things that are showing off don't necessarily, you know, help them in survival. That's probably due to sexual selection. It's something where there's competition for mates that has driven them to look very different. So it could be that females prefer males that look a certain way, or that males are competing with each other and using their visual looks to signal things to each other to compete for females. And there's lots of good evidence in the research people have done on cardinals to suggest both of those things are going on, that females prefer, you know, certain colors in males, and the males are signaling things to the females with their color, like I have a really good territory, for example, I have a lot of food, or I'm really healthy, things like that. One of the cool things about the cardinals is, though, even though the males are sort of when you first glance at them, kind of more colorful and sort of more beautiful than the females, you might argue, the females have some really interesting color going on too. So they have bright orange bills. And if you look underneath their wings, which is kind of difficult to do most of the time, but like if you see a female cardinal in mid-flight, for example, they have like this beautiful reddish pink color underneath their wings. And there's been some cool research on the females that shows that they are signaling things with those colors as well. So they are involved in the sexual selection side of things as well, even though they're not as like brilliantly colored as the males. They still have some interesting things going on with their color too. So their cardinals are a great system to ask these types of like sexual selection, mate choice, signaling type questions. They've been a really, really good system to look at those sort of things.
But isn't bright plumage kind of a mistake, because that kind of makes you stand out compared to the rest of the background, making you more available to predators?
Oh yeah, for sure. This is, again, something that Darwin realized. So he said, like, famously, when he looked at the peacock's tail, it made him like sick, because it just did not seem to work with his natural selection idea, right? Everything is all about helping the the individual survive? So how could some, you know, these ridiculous colors and ornaments, you know, help them survive? And so your point is exactly right. You know, even after Darwin came up with this idea of sexual selection to explain, you know, bright colors and cool ornaments and long tails and things, it's still the case that sometimes sexual selection and natural selection are sort of at odds. They kind of butt heads, right? So a trait that is really good at helping you attract mates could also be really good at helping you attract predators. And so the cool thing about that is if you, you know, look at what evolves, right? What trait is it that, you know, spreads through the population? It's going to be some compromise, some balance between those two forces, right? So maybe you can get a super, super long train if you're a peacock, but only to a certain point. You just can't get a really, really long one that's so long that you can't fly away from a predator. And it's probably the same thing with cardinals, right? They can stand out enough that the females can see them and they can attract, you know, a lot of females, but they're also facing this predator pressure almost certainly. Things like Cooper's hawks that are cruising around and, you know, see a nice big bright male sitting, you know, in the, you know, white snow probably stands out very easily. So there's a limit to how, you know, just ridiculously obvious they can be. So that's a really cool area of research that a lot of people are interested in, kind of how these like evolutionary forces sort of push back and forth against each other. And that definitely is going on with cardinals for sure, because the males are, they really do stick out like a sore thumb. Like if one's in your backyard, you know about it, right? They're easy to see cruising around the bushes, and they're really loud too when they're singing. So they definitely make themselves known when they're in the area.
And another question is, how monogamous are cardinals? Do they mate for life?
Yeah, we don't know a ton about what we call extra pair mating in cardinals. There are a lot of other species where we know more about it. There have been a few studies, and they are definitely not totally monogamous. They do not, you know, mate just with their, you know, their mate for life. They are what we call socially monogamous. So they basically look like they're monogamous. And they will stick with that partner for a while. Like in my studies of banded populations of cardinals year after year, usually if both members of the pair are still alive, they will stay with each other. But the reality is a little more complicated. So occasionally there will be multiple mating going on, like the male or the female will sneak off and mate with other birds. And the other cool thing is that the reason why it's called social monogamy and not genetic monogamy is, even though it looks like they're monogamous, if you were to take DNA samples from all of the birds in the population and DNA samples from the nestlings and look to try and match up the nestlings in a nest to their father, a lot of times you'll find mismatches. And we do see that with cardinals sometimes. So that's where this extra pair mating comes in. It's this sneaky mating that's happening on the side. So they don't break up their pair bond, right? They don't break up their marriage. They still stay together and look like they are a nice, you know, happy, lovey-dovey pair. But somebody's sneaking around behind the other one's back and maybe, you know, flying across the woods and mating with the neighbor real quick and coming back. So we know the cardinals do a little bit of that. It doesn't seem to be like really rampant like it is in some species, but there is a little bit of that sort of sneaky stuff going on. It's a very, very interesting area of research that we've only started to learn more about with like genetic techniques where we can look at the DNA of all the birds.
And we've talked a lot about cardinals so far, and I kind of want to hear from you now. Can you hit us up with maybe two or three fast facts about cardinals?
Fast facts about cardinals. They have been recently the subject of debates about whether they should be split into multiple species. They're a very widespread, or relatively widespread species. Like you can find them all throughout Mexico and throughout a lot of the United States now. And wherever you go, there are slight differences in the cardinals. They look a little bit different. Some have really long crests. Some have really long, you know, bills. They sound slightly different. And there have been people that have suggested the differences are big enough that maybe there's like three separate cardinal species. That's something that the ornithologists are currently sort of arguing over. One of the other cool little tidbits about cardinals is that even though they are usually red, the males, every now and then you'll see weird colored cardinals pop up, and usually they're yellow. So like every couple of years, the birders will go crazy and you'll see all these photos going viral of yellow cardinals. And it's this interesting sort of genetic mutation that happens where they don't process those pigments properly. So the pigments that I mentioned before that they get from their food that make them red, sometimes something goes wrong with that machinery in the body. And so rather than turning those into red colors, they turn them into yellow colors. So you'll see a really weird yellow cardinal cruising around. One of the things that's kind of fun about cardinals is they're one of the few species where they're, if you look at their scientific name, right, the Latin name, which is the genus and the species, the genus and the species are the same. So the scientific name for the northern cardinal is Cardinalis cardinalis. It's not very creative. It's like a, you know, this redundant name. Those are some cardinal fast facts.
Cool. And as kind of a starting to wrap it up question, why are cardinals important?
That's a great question. Something that, you know, I think anybody who's doing research of any kind has to keep in mind, right, is why are we doing the research we're doing? And, you know, maybe people who don't really care about birds, you know, or, you know, people who maybe are not even really paying close attention to like scientific research, like why should they care? You know, why should this be relevant to them? The thing I like about cardinals is they are providing this interesting example of a species that can coexist with humans. And to me, that's a very important thing to study, right? We know that humans are, you know, we dominate the global landscape now. There's you know, almost no corner of the planet that's not, you know, disturbed by humans. And so if we care about biodiversity at all, and, you know, limiting our impact on the planet and making sure we can coexist with the, you know, the wildlife on the planet, you know, we might want to know about how our activity is affecting the behavior of birds and all sorts of other critters. And cardinals are just kind of this cool example of, you know, almost like a success story, right? They seem to be able to live alongside us. They're not, you know, at risk of going extinct. They do just fine living in cities and living right alongside humans. So that's, you know, something that's interesting to study as kind of a counterpoint to some of these really dramatic examples of species that, you know, go extinct or are at the risk of going extinct because of human activity. So I think that's an important thing to study.
All right, Dan. Well, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to talk to me. It was a pleasure.
Hey, Nathan, no problem. I was really happy to do it. It was nice chatting with you.
Thanks for listening. To start, I just want to apologize for this late episode. I was just kind of busy with the first week of school and just couldn't find time to finish the episode. You can find Dan on Twitter at @evornithology and us on both Instagram and Twitter at @atriskpodcast. If you like this episode, please share it around. There is no bigger contribution that you can make to show that you can make to the show than to do just that. Anyways, that's really all I have to say for this week. But tune in next week at some point. I don't really know when the episode's coming out. To listen to me talk to Gillian Chow Fraser about caribous.